Good afternoon from the Real Ghost Stories Online Studios. I'm Tony Bruschi, coming to you this afternoon with some sad news. We have lost a member of the paranormal community, someone who's fairly well known by many of you. He's been a guest on our program, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. More importantly, a husband, a father, an overall great human being. Christopher Sutton has passed away, and I'm going to read for you now what Julia Sutton has posted on his Facebook page. It says, "Dearest friends, the family of Coyote Chris wishes to let you know he has passed to begin his new journey, spreading light into the darkness in another realm. He received an unexpected diagnosis of lung cancer less than a month ago. It was very aggressive. He lived his life to the fullest. We know many wish they would have been able to visit or speak with him. But know he will hear your words still. Take all lessons he taught, grow, share, and walk in the path of light. Love, Miss Coyote and the pups." And with that, we're going to replay for you an interview that I did with Chris last year, a little over a year ago. We were talking about his life, about his accomplishments, his journey, his discoveries, and it's an overall look at the man that he was, in his own words, and played for you in its entirety, part one and part two. This is from our podcast, The Grave Talks. A chance to look back at the life of Christopher Sutton. Today on The Grave Talks, Ways of the Shaman, a conversation with Chris Sutton. Chris Sutton grew up in a very practical, normal thinking house. The idea of acceptance of spirits or ghosts was viewed as simply nonsense. Later in life, Chris would find himself in a deep depression as a result of his career and being surrounded by constant negativity. He'd find a path out of this depression through therapy and adopting shamanistic traditions as part of his life. On this journey, Chris would find himself being asked to intervene on paranormal investigations, helping to bring peace to families being tormented by spirits. Today, we hear about this journey with Chris Sutton.
You know, like a lot of people have this story from their little kids and stuff like that. And I had some of that sort of thing where I would like catch things out of the corner of my eye, or I was able to like discern things about people. Folks may or may not know is I do practice shamanism. and this all ties together. But, you know, back when I was younger, I would have those moments where it's like, yeah, you know, this is kind of cool. But, you know, I grew up as a jock and I went to my parents' religious per se, but we went to the Unitarian Church. And so there's no really spiritual type of thing. You know, it's all very philosophical and very intellectual type of a framework. And so I was always based pretty much in what we call reality, quotation marks in the air. So I went along like this. I had very early when I was probably in late grade school, middle school, that type of thing, I was interested in UFOs. So that was my paranormal thing back then, was that sort of thing up into my 20s probably. The big event, the big thing where they got me, so to speak. I was actually in my mid-30s, and I was married, had a child at that time. She was one. And so my wife, Julia, she was a powwow dancer. And when she was in high school in the Explorers, she loves powwow dancing. And so we're living in this little bitty town in East Central Illinois, in a little bitty county. And for some reason, and this is how the universe works time and time again, for some reason, the national powwow, not just any little powwow, the national powwow comes to a county seat. And so my wife says, well, let's go. I want to see this because I used to dance and stuff like that. And I'm like, and I've got no frame of reference for any of this stuff. I mean, I knew about the Native Americans and the historical, and that sort of thing. And I always, felt a lot of empathy for that. So I'm like, okay, let's go check out the cultural stuff. This will be fun. So we went there and I'm watching the dancing, and they have a big main arena, and it's just beautiful, all the regalia and the different type of dances from the different areas is going on. And I look off, and there's a livestock barn. This is a county fairground, you know. And so there's a livestock barn over there with these judge cows and things like that. And I'm hearing a different kind of beat coming out of there. So I took my daughter, put her in the stroller, and we wheedled over there. And I went into this barn, and I found out later they were doing a gourd dance, a warrior's dance. And right there and then, actually scared the crap out of me, to be honest, because here my whole world just got rocked, because I could feel this other world, the spirit, this world of spirit, or whatever you want to call it, the next realm over. And I walked out of there dazed, and I said, I got to figure this out. And so, bang, I grabbed a book and read about this medicine man, this Sioux medicine man named Black Elk. And I say to the universe, I say to myself, wow, I'd really love to learn about that way of being spiritual. You know, I'm ready to get spiritual and stuff, and this is my path. And, you know, a week later or two, I'm reading a magazine from Chicago, and somebody's got a pipe circle. And that's how they, you know, you pray with the pipe in the Lakota tradition. And so I call them up. Can I come to your pipe circle? And I say, yeah, come on. And there it starts. So I learned all the shamanic stuff, and this is a healing. And you know, you deal with spirits. You deal with the spirits, the animal spirits, the spirits of the ancestors, or the spirit guides. And so I'm doing this, and then here comes the paranormal part. A friend of mine's son was a DJ at a local community college here, and I'd known this kid since he was born. He's like, you know, he's like a nephew to me. And he calls me up and goes, hey, I want to do this all-night radio show here at Lewis and Clark campus. That's the name of the school. And I want to do it on Halloween night. Would you do it? Can you do that? Can you do ghost stuff? I'm thinking, well, I mean, I had done a little bit helping people out with that type of thing, but I'd never really gone investigating. I'm like, well, you know, spirits of, you know, spirit guides, spirit animals, spirits, they're all energy, you know, why not? They're probably pretty similar. And so we went out and we're out all night, and I just winged the whole time. This is before there's any ghost shows. This is back in 1998. And I really had no idea what I was doing, but actually I came up with some things. And as I say, you know, you let spirit guide you. And so I came up with some things, and we did really well. I mean, we found some stuff and found a death spot where somebody, you know, we felt like somebody had died there. We found out later that a young lady had committed suicide in this room many years before. And so, that's how everything came together was back in 1998 when I started actually doing paranormal stuff along with my shamanism.
Let me ask you about your transition into getting into shamanism and then the paranormal stuff. Mm-hmm. Coming from a world of extreme practicality, you said earlier, normal, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. That must have been an interesting point in time and probably somewhat confusing. It's sometimes a difficult leap for someone who is very pragmatic, very practical on everything to accept or to believe in anything beyond, especially what they're brought up with and what they've accepted. How did you do that? What was it? Was there something in you that made you feel there's got to be more to life than this, or there are universe or world than this? What made you really be accepting enough, I guess, so to speak, to take some of these things in? Was it the moment where you felt that at that the dance that you had walked into? Tell me about that.
The first part is that I always felt that I was a little bit different, even though my actions were, the palling around with everybody and, doing things, you know, drinking your buddies and playing football and, you know, doing that kind of stuff, you know, not totally, but, you know, I was a hail and well met type of fellow until I got married, which is why I probably got married a little later than some people do. But I'd always felt like something was missing, that there was part, and it was something I couldn't figure it out. But I could feel it. I couldn't articulate it, but I could feel it, that something was not complete. And I tell people today, if you have that feeling, then, you know, let's look into it, because I bet it's something spiritual. And I can look back at the times when I got those clues and I just was too, you know, wasn't prepared to act on. I'm in third grade, and our teacher reads us the Hobbit. And as soon as she, they get to the part where Gandalf's introduced, I can feel that thrill go up my spine. I didn't know why. I said, wow, it's something I just must like. So I've always kind of liked lizards and stuff like that, you know, from that age. And then I'm 20 years old, and this is 1977. So, okay, I'm telling everybody how old I am, which is no problem. But so I'm watching Star Wars, okay, and for the first time. And, you know, get to the park where Obi-Wan tells Luke, you know, you must learn the ways of the Force if you want to come with me to Alderaan. And like, boom, I get that same thrill. I said, so I know something's missing, but darn it, I cannot put my finger on it. Now, I had lots of, at the time when this happened, mentally and emotionally, I was a wreck. I worked in social services all my life. And I was working with kids. The reason I lived where I lived, because there was an old military school there, they turned into a treatment center for adolescents who'd become sex offenders. Well, now, not only are they all offenders, but they're all victims as well. 97% of every sex offender has been sexually offended against. They've been sexually abused.
Sure.
And at that time, I didn't know I was empathetic, which means I can feel the emotions of other people. I always knew I was affected by other people, but I didn't know how. But I hear these kids are telling me stories about what had happened and what they'd done, which is horrible enough, you know, at the face value. But then you start I was feeling their feelings, and I actually would get pictures of this crap happening to them. And I was really depressed. I was, you know, clinically a mess.
Sure.
So I had this urge, okay, I got to do something here. And all of a sudden, you know, here, like I said, I go in this barn and I feel, and the pain went away. And I saw a hope. I felt hope. Wait a minute, this is, I didn't quite know it at the time, but I got that spark. This is your way out. Not that I didn't do other things. I went to therapy. I did a lot of good things for myself. This gave me the energy to say, okay, darn it, I'm not going down this path anymore. I'm going to fight my way out of it. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, I had a lot of motivation to try something new. And my advice to anybody is don't wait for that long. If you feel like you need to do something, do it.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it became a matter of almost necessity. Mm-hmm. I think I would have done it anyway, eventually, but it just came to me at really the right time and where I needed something to push me. And that did, and it changed my life, obviously for the better, because I'm still here.
What do you think that is, where you had that moment where you felt mm-hmm. like this is the way out, not in so much in the sense that there was literally a voice talking to you, or maybe there was, I don't know, if there's some, that's how clear it can be, saying this mm-hmm. is the way out for us, or is it just, you know, it's the download of the information of this is the way out, I know this is the path, this is what I need to do. Mm-hmm. How do you view that? Is that the universe telling you, you know, this is the direction that you should be going in? Is there a guide? Is it a ghost? Is it a spirit? Is it what is your opinion on what that is when your life gets to a certain point or a certain direction, and then there is a dramatic shift that just seems to happen? It almost finds you and helps mm-hmm. you, gives you that hand, that life, you know, that life vest or whatever to pull you out of what's pulling you down.
All the above. I always tell people, I wish I knew all the rules, all the possibilities that could happen, because it's your spirit guides. Now, I wasn't aware of them then. I am now. But I knew they were there. Now I look back and I knew they were there then. It took like a universal shift for me. And when you say the universe, it's like, okay, what's that? You know,
yeah.
It's a bunch of stars and that. No, it's this, I don't know, it's consciousness, whatever you want to call it. Because we all have a place in the universe. In our tradition, our practice now, we believe everybody has medicine. Everybody has a gift from God or from spirit. And that gift starts to wake up. And if it's not being tended to, it's like you're not fulfilling your destiny. You have free will. I mean, there's so many different angles and ways you can go to it. So I'm just kind of talking for me. Mm-hmm. That energy becomes so great that you have to finally say yes to it one way or the other. Otherwise, you start getting sick, like I start getting sick. And certainly some people get physically sick. And it's just, But once the spirit will interact with you in a way that you will respond to. I was just talking to a nice lady last night on the phone, and she was telling me her story about how she was seeing this apparition of a young Native girl, but it was becoming like more and more scary looking. And we got to talking, and she is of you know, Native American descent. And what we ended up coming up with was that this thing has been trying, the spirit guy's been trying to get her to pay attention to it. And so she wasn't paying attention to it when it was pleasing looking. So she started getting ugly looking. And so that's how it reached out to her. And so we got to talking about it. And so she's going to try now to try to be more accepting of it and start walking more of her path as far as her native. And she's a Navajo. And so you know, we talked about the Navajo way, and she's going to start looking into some of those and start doing that and see if that helps. Mm-hmm. with that. And she felt better just, you know, being able to identify what was going on, you know, it helped her identify that. But yeah, it just depends on the individual and what they need, what they will respond to. For me, I needed a pretty big display of force. Mm-hmm. And that's how, you know, hard-headed I was. But also, I mean, I'm, you know, rooted in that reality I was talking about. The Toltecs have a nice way of putting that. You've called, that's the tonal world. I mean, that's the world if we consider it the normal. Then the world of the Nawal, which is the world of spirit, is a whole different. They intertwine, but you have to realize you're both there and respond to both. And so the Nawal called very strongly to me, as it did to her, that the world of spirit, the spirit guides, the spirit people. And, you know, somebody was trying to reclaim their sister there. It was sister in the Navajo way. And so, yeah, it comes to you in different ways, different forms. My wife's going through some stuff now where she's starting to see things. And I've been after her for years. I said, you know, you need to find a teacher because I can't teach her. We're too close. And so I've got a friend that was a teacher, and she's been putting it off. And now all this stuff's happening. I just shrugged my shoulders. I told you. And so now she's looking into getting her path together. So yeah, it just comes in such different ways, but it's based on the needs of the person, what they'll respond to. Mm-hmm. Is how spirit tends to interact, and will send guides. You know, I've seen people have had car wreck. I mean, just all sorts of crazy things to get their attention.
Sure.
And you break it down, all of a sudden, wow, why did this happen? Well, this is why this happened. And it's very ingenious sometimes how people get their attention drawn to something. So
yeah,
it will give you what you need.
Where you were in a very low point in life, you were clinically depressed, mm-hmm. and you had that moment and you realized, I want to go down this path. I want to explore this. And eventually the end result after a certain amount of time is you're there, you're helping other people. Yes. You're practicing shamanistic things. You're going into that world and really being a resource for others. But before obviously you can get to that point to help other people, you needed to help yourself. You needed to get right to that point. So take me through that journey a little bit of what you discovered and how you got yourself pulled out of that negative place. What did you learn that then made you go down the path of realizing, okay, I want to help other people through their problems as well?
Yeah. One thing I always tell people right off the bat that come to me with bad things happening to them, I said, well, you know, spirit puts you through things so you can get through it yourself and conquer your way out of it. And then you can turn around and hold your hand out to the next person who's having that same problem. That's part of the medicine path. And so, yeah, so I, all of a sudden I start practicing stuff. I started, you know, some of the things started going to therapy and whatnot, which is very helpful. And I recommend that highly to people. Mm-hmm. So I start, you know, I get a teacher. And she, a female pipe carrier, is my first teacher. Her name was Claudia. And, you know, show me the ways of the pipe and showed me, sort of got me started on the healing part. Now, in most medicine traditions, you know, everybody says, well, I've got this gift. I need to help other people. No. Your first job is to figure out what the heck it is, what your medicine is, what your skills are. Then you heal yourself. As I said earlier, I've worked in social services for 30 years. I have seen way too many people They're to charge out there and help others. When the reason they're doing this is because they're hurting and they want to vicariously get rid of their pain through alleviating somebody else's. It does not work. It just messes them up more. I've seen more people get out of business because of that. So as a healer, if you're going to be a healer, if you're any type of, you know, or anything, anything you want to do, you got to go through the pain and then find a way to let it go. I mean, through me, it was through meditation, talking about it, therapy. But then when you're in your spiritual, starting your spiritual path, you start learning to work with the powers, powers of the earth, the powers of the sky, power, you know, the Chinese call it qi, and I love it. You know, that's a really good word for it. You can say the force too, because I use that a lot when I'm teaching, because people relate to Star Wars.
Sure.
But all this energy, and you work that energy through you, and it powers you up. It makes you feel better, and it allows you, gives you that strength to get through these things. And once you're starting to talk about it, and you're learning more about healing stuff, and you're healing yourself. I mean, I let people work on me to get myself. I learned by having other people help me out. And so, you know, I was shown a lot of kindness and along my path by my teachers. And so it's a super fast process, but it wasn't as bad as you think. It's basically up to you. How quick will you let these things go? Are you going to, because a lot of times depression is based upon, there's some chemical stuff, and I do believe that, but I can always pick out something in the past. And I had some stuff in the past that needed to work out, you know, some issues I had in relationships and whatnot. And so I'm working on those, but this energy from my medicine path made that go faster for me. And I believed more in myself, because, I mean, I tell you what, Tony, you start this stuff out and you're reality based, whatever. And, you know, you start realizing that, you know, spirit has paid this attention to you, and you're feeling like, I've got these gifts. I can, you know, I can do psychic work. I can do healing work, teaching, singing. I sing songs. I have a CD in the whole nine yards. But it's like, why me? For the longest time, I would fight myself, because I'm like, this can't be me. This can't. I read about people like this in books. Not like I'm, you know, anything like those wonderful medicine folks. But, you know, I've got some of these same attributes. Why did you pick me to do it? Mm-hmm. And then you have to realize, well, it's not about being chosen. It's about just being who you are. And we have such a problem in our culture of just being ourselves, because so many people have expectations for us, and we all have a script, whether it's our mother and our father, or our friends, or our spouse, or our children. They expect you to act in a certain way, and we too often times, or bosses too often times succumb to that. So we become somebody else's something. So you have to relearn, instead of being my mother's or father's child, I had to be me and not live up to somebody else's expectation anymore. I had to say yes to what I was, what was being brought to me, because that was helping me to heal. We've never met, and I've got a lot of tattoos on my arm, and every one of them has to do with one of these milestones, mm-hmm. where I said yes. And this is me saying yes, is by putting, you know, having somebody actually draw this on my arms, and just to say, that's me telling spirit, yes, I say yes to what you're telling me. I would do the best I can. And so you work through that. And begin, you all of a sudden, you don't just believe in yourself more in your spiritual path, but in the rest of other parts of your life, because you're more complete. You're actually being you instead of being somebody else, mm-hmm. what somebody else expects you to be. And I've seen people who are alive today and under the assumption that they still have to be their parents' child, and their parents are in the grave.
Sure.
And they're still being controlled by people who no longer walk the earth. Because we allow ourselves to be put in this cage that of all these cultural and parental and, you know, societal expectations. And you have to break free from that and just be yourself. No matter, I certainly never thought that I would be where I was today. I had no inkling, could never have dreamed it before this all happened. Mm-hmm. And now it's my life. It's, I love it. It completes me. I still work a regular job, you know?
Yeah.
I'm an advocate for people who live in nursing homes, and which is part of my medicine too, and is to help other people. So it works out really nice.
Sure.
But yeah, you have to allow the medicine to help heal you, and you have to work real hard on healing yourself, and to drop these assumptions, drop these things of not being yourself, and be who you are. As Joseph Campbell said, the dark cave we all fear to enter holds our greatest treasure. And that's exactly it.
It's very true. I would say that more times than not, when you talk to someone who is really truly being, you know, the authentic version of themselves, if you will, and they're the most mm-hmm. comfortable in their own skin, oftentimes they will be saying exactly what you just said, that I had no idea I would have gone down this path. I'd be where I am today doing what I do. This wasn't even on my radar. But then they discover, wait a second, this really is what feels right and what is going to be best for me. In turn, I can be the best version of me for others out there as well, my loved ones, my friends, and those that I don't even know yet.
Yeah.
You know. Let's talk about how, obviously, when you got through this, you discovered all this about yourself, you got to the place you are, and then you began this journey where you began to help people who were having situations involving the paranormal, involving ghosts, involving activity that they did not know what to do about. How did that begin for you? How did you get into the world of helping people that were having paranormal activity in their lives?
I can remember the first time it happened. This is actually before I did that, because I said before I did that ghost hunt for my son's friend, or my friend's son, and a friend guy I was working with, you know, he called me like at 1 o'clock in the morning one time. I said, "What do you want?" Because Chris, there's this ghost is singing. You know, they knew I was practicing the shamanism, starting the path and stuff. And so he goes, "I can't figure this out." Da da da. And so I said, I said, "Listen, we'll just," I forgot what I told him exactly. You know, just ask it to leave you alone and go back to bed, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. So he comes, we talked about it, and he's telling me what's going on. And I went to his apartment, I kind of felt around. He had a cat. And I got this feeling, looked at him, I said, "Where's this cat stay when you're not home?" He goes, "Hey, the little bitty bedroom." He goes, "Well, I, you know, block it in that bedroom." I said, you know, I just right there, he's, you know, I could feel a spirit around. And so I get this feeling, I said, "Listen," I said, "this is what I would do. This spirit loves animals. The spirit does not like that you're caging your cat up like that during the day. Try leaving the door open when you're gone. You'll try to, you know, how, you know, make that your apartment cat proof if it's areas where it could mess something up and see what happens." And sure enough, and he goes, 2 days later, goes, I feel good. The place feels better. Whatever it is, I still feel something there, but it's, you know, it's much more benevolent. He goes, "That was it. It didn't like the cat was being put up for the day." And so that's how it starts. It's something just small and innocuous like that.
My mom's going to haunt me that exact same way, because my mother, when she visits, she's alive. But I swear to God, when she does visit, sometimes it's like, you care about the cat more than all the other human beings, don't you? Because the first thing she does when she walks in, "How's the cat?" Because I'm allergic to cats. I love cats. I had a cat growing up. I didn't realize till I was an adult that it was the cat that I was allergic to. And my daughter loves the cat, but our cat it lives in the garage. We don't put the cars in the garage. The cat pretty much is free reign. So it's this huge room. So, you know, we take it out and put it on the porch in summer, but we take care of the cat. But my mother is so much, "Oh, it's too bad the cat can't be in the house." I'm sorry, I talk for a living, so that doesn't work well, but we try and treat the cat as well as we possibly can. But that will be her. She will haunt this house. She'll haunt me forever, I'm sure, doing that exact same thing with the cat. That's funny. So you have these things where it's something as simple as that. I think that sometimes is what people overlook when it comes to hauntings and ghosts, for whatever they want to call it. Because I think a lot of times we dig too deep. Television shows, the first thing they're going to go, "It's a demon." Oh, and it's not.
Every time.
And it's simple. It can be something as simple as that. Someone who is annoyed because you're not letting the cat out or giving the cat enough attention. So they're going to make it known. Fix your relationship with the cat. That's all.
Yeah.
And we overlook that sometimes these were once people. And a lot of times people are going to keep the same traits and the same personalities that they had in the living when they're dead. They're not necessarily some magical new being with superpowers. They're just over there now. So that's an interesting thing. I know that you have gotten involved in cases that have been much tougher. And much more to deal with than simply figuring out, just let the cat out. Why don't you walk us through one of the first things or one of the first cases that you got involved with that you were kind of like, oh my gosh, I think this might be more than what I was expecting, more than just Aunt Sally, you know, coming back, giving mm-hmm. a message or hanging out. Tell us about what that was like.
It's not trying to pick one out, because usually I don't get it. You know, I don't rattle very easily, so I take everything pretty calm. So mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of something that
maybe not even that you were rattled by, bugged out. But the others that called you in were pretty rattled by.
Gosh, they all seem to start that way. I would say I did okay. This is kind of one of my favorites. A family in just moved in this new subdivision that had just been created, and they were seeing stuff around the house, and it was scaring them. They were getting visions of these beings, ghosts or whatnot, or they would hear things, and they get a creepy feeling. And I'll tell you what, Tony, I mean, you probably talk to a lot of people. Think about private house detail is that 90% of the time, the demons are drugs, alcohol, violence, and mental health issues. That's normally what the demons are in so many of these cases. And so I know a lot of investigators won't touch them, even touch them anymore. But anyway, these guys are legit. It's a very nice family. It's the kind you would not, it's when it's the people you would never expect would call you. Those are the ones I kind of prick my ears up. Okay, we probably have something going here then, because this is unusual. And so I get there and first time I went there, I did a thing around the house, and I'm getting this feeling like it was kind of a weird house anyway. They had mirrors, a weird place. I said I would move this and that. That might help. But the more I moved around, I said, there's something here and it's not very happy. And more, I felt like there's more than one. And there was trees around the house. One thing I have found in a lot of different places is that Native American spirits tend to hang out around the trees during the day and whatnot, and they'll come out at night. What was happening at night, I think this was going on, and I got talking to the owners, and so they just dug out the subdivision. Now, there's a rule in Illinois where I live that you're supposed to remediate any type of native site or any type of native remains or anything like that that you might find, and they're supposed to call in an archaeologist to clean it out and to move it. Respectfully in the right way. Well, contractors don't always do that. If they catch something, they'll just put in the back dirt and, you know, haul it away, or, you know, keep it for themselves, and they don't do what they're supposed to do. When you disturb graves like that, or just areas, even areas where the people lived, I've seen this across two or three states now, where they get the native spirits get a little bit pissed about that sort of thing. And so that, and then they tend to kind of not take it out on the new owners, but they're walking around unhappy, and that translates to seeing things you know you're scared of and whatnot to the people living there, and having feelings and hearing the noises because they're disturbed. I don't blame them. So I went back. First I said, "This is what I want you to do. I want you to create a medicine wheel." And she created the lady that the wife, mom, created a beautiful medicine wheel. I mean, it's just like she looked it up and banged it right there. I said, "Leave food offerings out," and so we did that. And she goes, "It's getting better." I said, "Okay, I'm going to come out." And, you know, people want you to come over and get rid of stuff. And I tell them, if it's not hurting you, I'm not getting rid of nothing. You know, you need to learn how to make nice with it. And so that was kind of my message to them. I said, this is their land. I can't make them go away. And I don't want to do that. However, I will make, you know, we'll make peace together. And so we went through the house and we smudged the entire house and, you know, cleansed it and used the salt to seal your work, not to drive them away, to make it more wholesome. But, you know, these people care. These people, you know, I use white sage. Use an ancient method here of not cleansing in a way that's not, because there was some dark, a little bit of dark energy. There's a funky shaped house. And so we got rid of that and we, you know, made it more wholesome. I burned some sweetgrass, which attracted the good spirits. And that's also a gift to the folks. And so I took I did a thing around the whole house. And so I take it inside and outside and run around the house and sang and chain talk to them and say, "Hey, you know, these people like you." And they would say, "Yes, we're sorry, but they bulldoze through your stuff. We'll be very respectful. We'll thank you and we'll talk to you," which they have continued to do. And something like this happens to me inevitably. So we get this all done and it's feeling great. And I can feel them out in the trees and they're appreciative and the family feels so good. And so I, you know, you want to close when you do these things. And so I made this big thing. Yeah, oh, thank you very much, grandmothers and grandfathers, for being so good to these people. They will, in kind, they will be kind to you and honor you whenever they can. And this is a wonderful day. We're so blessed. It is done. I clap my hands, step right back in the pile of dog crap. And so, you know, the coyote part of me comes out and I got to do something stupid. So, but yeah, I mean, it's not about going to, I mean, I've gone head to head against stuff because I felt nasty things before, and I'm not scared of that sort of thing if I think people are threatened. But otherwise I try just, you know, let's make peace.
Sure.
Let's work this out and we can all live together. Spirits can live with the people, you know, the corporeal people. And it usually works out pretty well. People feel better. They acknowledge them and they feel good. And they feel like, you know, the spirits are approve of them and like them. And so it's, you know, it usually works out very well. Sometimes you get into a thing. I only had this happen in the house once or twice where I've kind of cornered something and it wants to be nasty. And I'm not cross you over. I'm not going to do any of that kind of stuff. Where, I can't, let's see, I'm trying to think of a way to explain this, but I get my energy up and I don't like attack, but I, you know, I'm like, I'm letting the spirit know, listen, this is not going to work. You cannot bother these people. You can't, you know, we try to reason with you. We need you out of the house. And so I just, you know, we do smudging. They'll be with a purpose this time of getting it to leave. And then again, I'm saying you can't cross. I'm not telling you have to cross over. I don't think you can cross things over. I really don't think so. I've heard people claim that, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you got, you know, you don't have to leave, but you can't stay here.
Sure.
And so then it's more of a purpose of I'm pushing you out. I'm not attacking you. I'm not trying to destroy you because I can't destroy you, but I can push you out. And that's what I do. And then you start at the bottom, like in the basement, you work your way up in a circle, waterway or sunway, whichever way it works for you. See, only as you go, because you're, you know, you want to see you work as you go. So because you're pushing it, you want doubling back on you. So you're coming in, you're smudging, putting some white candlelight in there for the light of spirit, and then sealing it with some sea salt or black salt as you go out the door. And so, and then you leave a window open up at the top floor, wherever, attic, whatnot. Because when it goes out, you don't want it taking the window frame. I've heard stories of that actually happening, of, you know, somebody doing that to get rid of a spirit, and it took the whole window out. So you want to give them a way out so it doesn't destroy anything. I've seen windows crack and stuff because of that stuff. But, and then, yeah, it's just it's a forceful way of saying, you know, you got to go, but that's not an attack. It's just like it's a push, and you got to go.
It's almost like fogging out a home for bugs in a certain way. Is it always a foolproof method? Is there always a way where the living and their request and their intent will win out over the spirit on the other side when they go through something like this? Or does the spirit have the right to say, no, I know you want peace. I know you want me out, but I don't want out and I don't want peace. So you can try and eradicate me all you want with all the salt and all the rituals and all the things you are going to try and do. Screw you. I'm staying. I mean, does it depend on the type of spirit you're dealing with that has a power like that? Or does that exist? Does the living ultimately have the upper hand no matter what?
I think that bat power does exist. I have seen it happen where they'll leave when I'm there, and then they'll come back when you're gone. That's why I always teach people how to do this stuff. I don't just do it.
Sure.
I teach them how to do it, and hopefully. But I think, I mean, I have certainly read cases and seen cases and talked to a lot of people where that's happened. Sometimes you got to get a team of things. Sometimes you got to do some sealing work on the outside. But, you know, are there things more powerful than me? You better believe it. I've felt them. I haven't had to go against them, but I felt them. I know they're there. And there are some powerful things in nature, and there's powerful things in spirit. And I don't believe in demons, per se. I believe the words, one, is over to use. Two, it transfers too much power.
Yeah.
Because people get that image of the pits and, you know, hell and all that stuff. And so fear takes too much of a reign in that and so it gives the being more power. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this is strictly opinion-based, and I always love to hear everyone's perspective on it from where they're coming from. I guess my question with that would be, because a lot of times you kind of have the ghost family tree, and it's ever-expanding. I have more questions than answers, the more people I talk to. But you kind of, on a very base level, you have ghosts of the living who, you know, and then you can have every personality type there, from the kindest, sweetest person in the world to horrible dictators who murdered millions of people. And they could all be spirits. And that horrible dictator type person could easily come across as a demon, because in life they pretty much were a demon, but they were once a living, breathing human being.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have...
They'll say demon. I mean, it's like, oh yeah, demon.
Yeah.
Well, how do I know you're telling me the truth?
Exactly.
You know, because... Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I don't think so.
And then a lot of times you'll have people jump in down the road of, and then there's angels of the people who never walked the earth but are there to help.
Yeah.
And then you'll have the demon category where it's they never walked the earth and they're there to destroy and just, you know, cause a headache. With your belief system, and you said you don't like to use the word demon, how does that work with you? What's your thought process there? Are all the spirits, all the things that we're interacting with on the other side, were they all once here as people who have passed? Or are there other entities and other things out there that are conscious, that are able to manipulate and communicate, that are something else?
I believe that. I believe that not every spirit you come across is the ghost of a former human being. And it's because I've experienced it. I mean, and I usually get it in a way that they're either benign they're as powerful. They just don't care to, you know, think to mess with things. Or they tend to be somewhat helpful. But all these elemental spirits, and, you know, you go back and you look at some of the folklore from Europe and other countries, you talk about the little people, the fae, and all this kind of stuff. These aren't people. And people have been experiencing these types of things for hundreds of thousands of years. And so you have these elementals are these beings that are not human. They're something else. There's some other kind of construct, be it of nature or whatever. I'm not sure. Again, this gets to the point where I don't know exactly what the rules are and how these things, you know, with this. I've encountered them. I was doing and there's this place down in Missouri I went to. It's called Valley Mines. And I had the second oldest house west of the Mississippi. There was a French mining colony town, is what it was back in the day. And the house had been built in 1749. And so we'd gone there to do an event and get some people together and go investigate all this stuff. And so we go and we get there, and there's a bunch of cabins across the road. And so we were going to the various cabins, and we were going to do the old house last. And we came across Wainwright's cabin, and it has been built in 1850 or something like that. Still there. So we go in there, and I had another team. I have a team. I work with other teams and whatnot. There's less drama that way, but, I have found, so we were all in there, and they had a medium with them. And so we're all in there. We went in there too. And every place we've gone to is very active here. All the stuff lit up. You could feel the spirits. Walking this place, everything went dead. And Melissa, the lady knowing lady who's the medium, she looks at me and goes, Chris, I say, yeah, but they don't like you, so they're not going to come out. Now, that does happen occasionally because, like I talked before about getting spirits to kind of muscling up energy-wise to get the spirit to leave, they can feel that, and they're somewhat timid around me, or they just don't like me because, you know, who's this jerk who thinks he can do stuff like that. So every once in a while, I have to excuse myself and walk out, and things start working out. So at this place, you know, it's out in this valley, and it's surrounded by trees and things like that. And this little clearing was where the town part was. And I'm looking also, and I see little lights and things like that in the grass. So I thought, it's dew or whatnot, or fireflies, but it's like awfully bright to be a firefly. So I went down, so I walked over towards it, and then the lights receded. I said, well, that's odd. Because I reached the grass, there was no dew in the grass, it was very dry. And I walked back, and they came back out. They, you know, advanced again. So every time I, you know, play a little game with them, they go back and forth. You can kind of see these little twinkly lights in the back of the woods, this huge red light. Just, you know, I thought it was taillights of a car, and I thought later there's no road back there. It was what some people call spook lights. But it's these elemental superpowers at work there. And you could just feel it. It's a different kind of energy altogether. And I said, well, this is kind of cool. And I, you know, I'd always kind of believed in it, but I'd never really had a really big experience with it. I said, now I'm seeing all this stuff firsthand. And they intermingle well with the native spirits I've found since then. And so I brought everybody out. A couple people looked in and said, wow, that's really cool. You know, I said, yeah, it's kind of mucked. It was cool. I said, I'll, put my data bank to work on later, and went on with the event and ended up the big cabin and whatnot. And that was fun. So then I said, let's try some. I said, I've got everybody in a circle. I got my drum. I always take my drum with me wherever I go. And I sang a couple songs. We talked to the spirits. We directly said, hey, spirits of this land, we know, your grandmas and grandfathers, we thank you for watching us, and we really enjoyed being here, and start just, making nice to them. That's what you do when you're in somebody else's land. And so we sang a couple more songs, and all of a sudden the trees started swaying when there was no wind. And I thought, good Lord. And you could, and people went to the edge of the trees and stuff, their little things, and the little lights are going off on the K2s and everything, and they got some EVPs of whispering and things like that. And it's like, whoa, that is a power greater than a regular, which you would call ghost. Mm-hmm. So those are the elemental powers at work. And since then, I've had some other experiences with them. It's pretty neat.
When you have to go head to head with something dark that was not human, is it a whole different set of rules for dealing with something like that versus dealing with something that was living, that would understand, basic human to human communication?
I find out they usually understand.
Okay. Right?
That's why, and I've not had a conversation, I cannot say that.
Sure.
But it's more of an energy, like energy to energy. That is like mind to mind. And so, God, I don't sound like I'm bragging, but I can build my energy up pretty good. And that's what I do when I feel other people are in danger around me. Because I see, if I'm investigating with people or ask people to come out with me, then it's my job to make sure they're safe. And so you feel these, like this dark, I've had it happen before at a couple places where you feel this dark entity come in and it's not human. You can just feel it. It's a whole different feeling. And it's usually they're just curious. But there have been times where it feels threatening. And so I'm like, okay, well, first you get everybody the hell out if you can. But it is a different type of, at the end of the day, it's still, am I strong enough to keep it from doing whatever it wants to do? And it may just be benign. It just happens to have that bad feeling to it.
Sure.
But it's like, it's a whole different, there's not that give and take mentally. It's just, it's feeling to feeling, power to power. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they come in and it's like, okay, I just hope, and they'll usually keep their distance. And I might say, if somebody's with me, hey, say, be awake over here, get your energy up. And that seems to do the trick. But I've never had been attacked frontally or anything like that. I've been grabbed. Mm-hmm. I've had a rock thrown at me a couple times. Been hit with a pebble once. And it's more mischievous. But you can just feel it. Yep. And I think to myself, it's like, okay, just get all your energy up, and it'll won't want to come play with you, and you stay away from it. And that seems to keep their distance. And I have talked to other people who've encountered some pretty nasty things. So far, I've been lucky not to have gotten in over my head. But I always tell people that could happen because that's what I do. And so I go into these situations, and so who knows what could happen sometime. Mm-hmm. But it's a whole different feeling, Tony. It's it's one of those things that's hard to explain. It's hard to say, you just know it when you feel it. It's something, it almost has to be experiential. I couldn't put it on a chalkboard. I mean, I could tell you and say, you will feel a strong energy. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're completely oblivious to that thing, you might not feel it. You might just feel uneasy. Sometimes you walk in someplace, you feel uneasy. That could be your response, your body's response to it.
Yeah.
But they generally... if you have, if you're open, that sort of thing, they make a pretty good impression on you in that way. So
let me ask you this. Earlier you had talked about graves being disturbed and then trying to to make peace. When a grave is disturbed, the assumption I think everyone will jump to is, well, it must be the spirit of the person whose grave that is now acting out, that is upset. Is that always the case, though? Is it always that individual whose grave was disturbed that's returning to let you know I'm angry about this? Or is it more something of the area, something of kind of the rules of the game of you don't disturb a grave.
Right.
You know, there's other watchmen out here that are going to let you know on the other side of that wasn't cool what you just did.
Mm-hmm. I think it can be both. I think it's more like what you're saying about something else is there, because I mean, we'd be neck deep in freaking ghosts if everybody was still hanging around or coming back and forth. Now, there's a whole different area there of coming back and forth to portals, and that's a whole new ball game there and how that supposedly works. But I think it's just something around that feels that, you know, I think some spirits remain behind to protect areas. I don't know why, but they seem to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think especially a lot of the native cases, it's just native spirits around that, you know, or desecrating, but it could be anybody if you intentionally desecrate a grave. I mean, because as human beings, we put so much energy into that, you know, to our loved ones been buried there. So we leave all that energy of, you know, this now the body's supposed to be interred and safe and is in God's hands. And somebody comes around with a bulldozer or whatnot and, you know, and roots it up. And so it could get a lot of reactions out of living people who aren't related to those folks. You know, you see all types of. I get pretty upset when I find out graves are being desecrated.
Yeah,
and I will let people know that. But I think too, I think it's probably more likely it's just the spirit that's around. But I could see it because some spirits are tied to this earth; they won't move on apparently, and so they're going to, you know, or they're in a. how in life we get fixated about something and just will not let it go, even though you know you should. For some people, it's an ex-wife or an ex-husband or somebody's mother or something, a boss who fired them, or they fixate on that. And usually after time, we say, okay, well, it's nothing to do about now. Let's just move on. Some people don't move on. Their whole lives they're dedicated to focusing on this negative event. And so I imagine the same things happen. Some people, they say that's why spirits remain behind. You know, whether you call it unfinished business or what, if they're so fixated, they won't move on because it's like, okay, this is where my body's at, so I'm going to stay right here. You know, so attached to their body. Mm-hmm. And they don't move on. I mean, theoretically, that's possible. So, you know, but I think it's more likely to be a spirit that's there and like, oh, okay, this isn't a good thing.
Sure.
And they'll start acting up.
So often when individuals in their homes or their property, whatever it may be, have something unexplained going on, obviously the natural reaction, because it's become a normal thing with popular culture and all of the ghost shows, is now, well, let's call the paranormal investigation team to come on out here and let's have them answer the question or eradicate or whatever their idea is of what they think should be happening to tamper down whatever uncomfortable activity is happening. That's the road that they go to. If you could say one thing to individuals out there who have something going on that may not be, you know, to the level of, you know, we need a full investigation and we need, you know, exorcisms or whatever out there to calm things down, to make peace. If there is, in fact, something going on at someone's home, would you say that there's sometimes just a very simple answer that you don't need to get a bunch of people involved? If you just followed this simple best practices, here's how you could find peace on your own. What would your message be to that?
You know, first is like, you know, kind of step away from the situation for a second and look over the whole house, what could be causing noises. You know, kind of check that stuff first. People want to just jump to, but I knew some people that they, heard scratching and they had a trailer head scratching and stuff like that and thought demons were trying to get in their trailer. Well, you take a look and they had mice or something underneath in the skirting there. They were scratching on that. That's what was causing the noise. Mm-hmm. And so take a look at all that stuff first. Cause you know, like you said, the airwaves are saturated with ghost shows right now on the Travel Channel and one of the other ones. And God, just trotting out show after show. It's incredible. But, you know, everybody jumps to that conclusion. Find out what's, you know, take a good look around your house and see maybe this is making the noise. Try to replicate what you think you're hearing. You know, go through that route first. Make sure it's nothing else. Calm down. Take a step back and take a good look at what is physical that could be causing the issue. Now, a lot of times it's like, okay, it just comes to something as simple as say, I will come out and I'll tell people, just say hello, good morning to it. You know, if you feel it by, say, hey, good morning, how you doing? Or, you know, thank you for, you know, for being here. Or if they're being a pill, say, just stop, you take control of your own house and say with conviction, knock it off. I'm trying to do something. You know, it could be that simple. You always start with the kindness first and say, hey, I'm glad you're here. Thank you. You know, what can I do to help you today? Or, you know, or just, oh, you know, or I'll have to sit you out a little food here every once in a while. And, you know, you might not find the food gone, but the offering itself is very important that you're showing that you respect and courtesy. But you can also, too, like I said, be stern with it. Say, hey, this is my house. You know, maybe you used to live here. I don't know. But, you know, don't mind having you around, but you got to behave, you know, doing this or leave me alone. There's a lot of people who are budding empaths or mediums that get bugged by spirits because they think the spirits think they can talk to them and they can't do it yet. Or maybe never will. They may never want to say yes to that, which I certainly understand that. But you have to lay down boundaries like you would with your children or anybody else, any other house guest you have. You know, come in my house and tear up my furniture or move stuff around. No, leave stuff alone. And that can be helpful as well. Or if your house is cluttered, unclutter it. Make a good flow of energy going through your house, and that can make things a lot better. I went to a house one time to help this guy out, and they were hoarders. Nobody had to have bugs, too. I had to call Mrs. Coyote to come down and meet me at the basement with a full set of clothes and get this other stuff into the wash and debug my bags and stuff like that I carry with me. So that's another thing. Just declutter, make your house a brighter, more wholesome place. Sometimes I've seen a lot of cases where people are in emotional crisis through many different reasons, and the ghosts show up for the show. There was a ghost like that at my in-law's house that would show up because they would get in fights and stuff sometimes. They show up for the show. So, you know, live a quieter, calmer life, and so they don't get any feed. You know, they don't either feed off or they enjoy it, whichever, you know. Some spirits seem to enjoy that stuff, and so they'll come hang around. Do things to improve your life that way, and that can also be helpful. Again, you know, if that doesn't work, then you could. I wouldn't call a whole team, and I'd ask one person to come over and say, have them do an evaluation. Put it come tromping around with all their stuff. But yeah, I mean, and you know, you can light a candle. You know, some people like to pray to the angels. Cool, you know, or ask your spirit guides to come in. Everybody's got spirit guides. To ask your spirit guide, you know, you haven't met him, get to come in and say, hey, you know, please help me, or Angel Uriel, Archangel Uriel, or, you know, whatever your belief is, that's cool. You know, bring that positive energy into your life. And that is also helpful, like, you know, without calling, you know, the Ghostbusters out to come to your house and do all their stuff. So, yeah, there's all sorts of things. But a lot of it's just stand up and say, hey, I'm not putting up with this. And here's some sage, you know. Let's, you know, you can smudge your house too. That's, you know, anything to make it more wholesome can be helpful.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Chris Sutton. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program today. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for being a gravekeeper and supporting the Grave Talks.